Part 2 of the War on Waste Innovation Encyclopedia. Part 2, Who's in Charge Analysis. This is pretty simple. The CEO is in charge. You don't forget that. If you're trying to bring some democracy to your organization, be very careful. A typical corporation is not a democracy, and some painful unilateral decisions have to be made. A well-run company more closely resembles a benevolent dictatorship. When decisions are made, there is no vote. The CEO makes the critical decisions. One of my pet peeves with various CEOs that I've worked with involves any decision that they make to change the company structure. It is not a decision that is open for management vote. For example, lean manufacturing is one such change process. Conceptually, it is a very, very neat idea. In practice, it was a grandiose failure. And I think there's a simple reason for that. The CEOs of those companies who tried to change to the new paradigm demanded by TQM and the other alphabet soup of products didn't understand that they had to lead the change. It is the CEO's responsibility to lead any paradigm change or any paradigm shift. As we will explain in more detail in a book on the tribal knowledge paradigm, new initiatives are wonderful. They serve as a way to infuse a burst of energy into a company, and good things come from that infusion of energy. Sometimes. A better approach is to use any of these infusion initiatives to kickstart a program that recognizes the value of tribal knowledge improvement and then leaves the company with a management paradigm that supports that approach. Improving tribal knowledge should then become part of the management paradigm. Strategy. Strategy is probably the most misunderstood part of the CEO's job. Let's begin with a definition. Michael Porter, the great Harvard University strategy guru, defines strategy to be any number of unique value propositions. And a value proposition is any number of ways to make money. The value proposition is the same as the value-added concept that we use when we define waste. The strategy of a business defines the activities that will be used to create the unique set of value propositions. This serves as a lead-in to what happens in the war on waste. We help everyone to get clear about our definition of waste. In the war on waste, waste is defined as anything that doesn't add value. To make the definition palatable to those in the company that didn't add value, for instance, payroll clerks, accounts receivable and accounts payable clerks, shipping clerks, CFOs, etc., we have defined an activity called essential support to single out jobs that are necessary but don't do value-added work. So in WOW, we get very clear about the value proposition because that is how waste is identified. If employees are crystal clear about the value delivered by the company, then they will be able to identify waste. So we target all projects to look at waste. In a way, then, these projects reflect the success of the CEO in being able to execute strategy. If the strategy is good, but the transference to employees is not, it should appear as waste. For example, if a metal fabricating company has a defined strategy to be a JIT supplier and their machine setups are higher than the industry averages, then they won't be able to deliver cost-effective small batch runs demanded by JIT. The wastes identified in a WOW class will almost always find this process problem. because the strategy is targeted at JIT, one of the ways of making it work is to have small batch sizes. In JIT factories, you never want any production active with inventory that will not be consumed by our customer within days. In the JIT world, inventory has got to move quickly from production to the customer's production facility and out the door to their customers. So we see in this example that the war on waste has aligned the company's strategy of being a JIT supplier with their process of shorter setup times for the machine tools. I think this is a significant consequence of most WOW projects. We have helped to align strategy with process. Another example of strategy disconnect or waste might be the strategic commitment of management to deliver all products in 2 days, and the average ship time is actually 3 days. This is strategic lip service at its best. So, in the war on waste at this company, excessive lead time will be addressed. That's a guarantee. Employees hear the CEO and manager say that they want 2-day shipment, but they don't do those things necessary to make it happen. This is fertile ground for the war on waste. If delivering product isn't happening, you can guarantee that the employees will zero in on that, and more than likely, there will be a number of different projects addressing different aspects of this problem. Lawrence Bossidy, the former CEO of Allied Signal, made his aspect of the war on waste very clear when he said, "At the end of the day, I don't bet on strategy. I bet on people." And that is exactly what we do in the war on waste. We bet on the people. Michael Porter is also very fond of saying, when you're competing on operational effectiveness, it's very hard to sustain an advantage because everybody, of course, tries to imitate your success. So we might be asked, isn't the war on waste an operational effectiveness idea? Yeah, it is. But in order to be able to compete successfully, you just may need to improve your operational effectiveness. At that point, you may have defined a strategic advantage in which you have used operational effectiveness, OE, to gain a strategic advantage. It isn't a sin to use OE as a strategy, but Porter is right on. Once you have shifted from being market niche follower to a dominant market niche leader, people will imitate your success. So when you become the market leader, you have a whole new set of problems to worry about. This point has raised a number of issues with various CEOs. Granted, at any moment in a market niche, there will be a leader and followers. The goal, of course, is that once you become an industry niche leader, that you want to stay there, and that's hard to do. Brad Mattson, CEO and founder of Mattson Technology, made an interesting observation to me one day. His company had been fighting to become the industry leader in their market niche. Once they got there, they realized they were vulnerable because their strategy had been designed to compete as a follower. So they modified their strategy and started acting like an industry leader. At any moment in time, the swap from leader to follower is going to go on, and your strategy will change accordingly. Or you may stay the course that got you there. Whatever strategy is you follow, it is not stagnant, and it must be etched in jello, not granite. It must be subject to review and critique on an ongoing basis. Consider this example. A client had found that during the war on waste, his machine shop was able to deliver parts to his main client on a very efficient, just-in-time fashion. We had developed a Kanban system, a self-scheduling parts management system, to manage his inventory. But he also got so good at running the quoting process that he could quote a part, produce a sample, and deliver it with a quote. This became a component of his new strategy. Now, he was warming his way into the customer's engineering pool, and he became the preferred vendor for pilot run samples needed by the engineers. They just didn't want the hassle of working with anyone else. And this way, he became part of the engineering staff, and his people knew about opportunities long before his competitors. So he used the operational efficiencies to gain competitive advantage. But as Michael Porter points out, he knew others would emulate his success, and they tried. He used the results of the war on waste to change the rules of the competition for business. He was now the industry leader and had to continually set new rules for competition that others would have to emulate. That is what strategy is about. In this case, the machine shop owner had a whole range of operational efficiency improvements that he was going to use to his strategic advantage. It turns out that he had 6 years of success maintaining an edge on his competition using these operational efficiency advantages. But one of the interesting aspects of this discussion is that he realizes that he needed to get into doing assemblies for his client. This was good business because he got more margins on the assembled units. By continuing to react to his customers' requirements, he used his efficient production shop to extract more value from his customers. And all of these benefits began with a war on waste effort targeted at machine setup. The reason for this example is so good is that it shows the progress of a company from the war on waste to strategy changes to new visions for the company. The CEO was very sensitive to the changes in his company vision that resulted from these business improvements. His initial vision was that he was a quality machine shop. And as he became more efficient, his vision was that of an efficient just-in-time supplier of parts. And it evolved to become a major partner to semiconductor equipment manufacturers from an idea to production. The CEO of this story stayed right on top of both his vision and his strategy. The end of part two of chapter two. If you want to find more about the war on waste and all of its successes and opportunities, you can go to our website, www.waronwasteacademy.com, or you can contact Len Bertain at len@bertain.com. Thank you very much. See you in part three.